Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, and I'm joined by some special guests today. I know you guys were hoping for Seth Manfield and John Stern, but instead, you get the Trey McLaren.
Hey, everybody.
And Small Mite.
What's up, everybody? I'm glad to be here. You know, when John and Seth couldn't come, it was something that was obvious, Spencer. The next two best Magic players, you know. And then Michael Hinderaker works for Watts, so you couldn't get him. And then Kling was busy. And then I think Casey had something going on. So we're here. We got there.
Moving on up.
Yeah.
Top 12.
We're happy to exist on the list.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, Mason and Trey are the host of another podcast on the network called the Even Odds Podcast. So in the spirit of hashtag always promoting, why don't you promote Even Odds really quick, Mason Clark?
Sure. So Even Odds Podcast is a podcast focused at people on the PPTQ and RPTQ grind, which rest in peace. Now it just means the PTQ grind, which I'm sure we'll get more information about here in a week. But what basically is the show is, if you have been listening to CC for a really long time, we're kind of actually modeled after original CC. So we're doing a lot of episodes that are focused on things to help you improve as you're starting on the grind, where you're midway to the grind. You know, when me and Trevor talked about doing the podcast, there were a lot of podcasts like yours now that are really focused at the GP and higher up level, right? And some SCG podcasts out there too. But there weren't really many at the PTQ level. And so we really wanted to provide that kind of viewpoint and focus and what it's like to be at that point in the, you know, the stepping stones, essentially.
All right. So check that out over on the Constructive Criticism Network. That's Even Odds Podcast. All right. So most of you probably know Small Mite over here, but you might not actually know who Trey is. So Trey, why don't you give people a little description about yourself, you know, your Magic upbringing. I believe, you played on the Pro Tour, you have SCG Top 8s. Why don't you talk a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I started playing Magic in 1994. With the revised pre-release. So I've been playing for a long time and did the SCG tour for a long time, did a considerable number of top eights in regards to that circuit, and then changed my focus away to going more towards trying to qualify for the Pro Tour and do Grand Prix and that type of thing. Did qualify for Pro Tour Aether Revolt and was able to compete in Dublin 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago at this point. I don't really know what the time period was. And did that. I've done content creation in the past when I was doing the SCG circle. I wrote some articles for Star City at that time and have been excited to be getting back in now to doing content with Mason and glad to be here on the network.
Awesome. So, you know who else is glad you're on our network? It's our sponsor, Oasis Games. You can check them out at mtgoasis.com. You can get 15% off of your first order by using the code CCMTG at checkout. And you can get 4% off of every order by using the code WouldThatBeGood. You know, we know that over, you know, Goblin Char Bargains, you know, they drive a hard bargain over on Even Odds. But we've stuck with Oasis since episode 13 of Constructive Criticism, and it's because we really believe in them. We believe they offer amazing product. It's funny.
They really do. I'm using a lot.
I was actually going to say, Mason, why don't you pimp our sponsor for a minute?
Yeah, sure. So, if you're new to the show, you might not recognize you from like a year ago. But I used to be on Constructive Criticism behind the scenes, and I would guest host whenever Spencer couldn't fill in. And I got some of the sponsorship from there. And really, I think the only time I couldn't find a card from them was when Goblin Lore blew up that one weekend. But every other time, if I needed any random card or my Semblance Anvils or anything crazy like that, I would just go to Oasis and they'd have it in stock. And normally for like a very good deal, especially during the price hikes. It's like Goblin Lore's, you know, they had them at a cheaper price. So if I got there quicker, I would have got this deal. But the Oasis Games has it all. And the discount code really does pay for itself. Before I even was on the show and I was a listener, I bought my Scapeshift deck, almost all of it from them, and with between the two codes I saved like $50 or something like that, which is a huge amount of money. And when you're buying a big modern deck, like the codes really add up. So
yeah, we love Oasis Games, so check them out. You can also support the show directly by going to patreon.com/ccmtg. So no question of the week this week from our patrons, but if you are a patron, you get access to that, so check that out at patreon.com/ccmtg. But just a reminder to everybody, this is kind of your last reminder. I will be John and Seth are at the Pro Tour. They're preparing for the Pro Tour in their testing houses, and you know, that's why they're not on the show this week. They're preparing for the Pro Tour. There will be a Patreon-only episode for patrons of $12 or more with both of them. So what will happen is I will do an episode with John. I will do an episode with Seth. They won't be on together. We'll talk about their individual testing processes. I'm recording with John at 11:30 my time or something on Wednesday. And then I haven't set up for Seth's time, but it's right after deck lists are submitted. So we're going into this like, this is what I'm preparing for. This is what I think of this format. It's very in-depth content that they're sharing with their biggest supporters. So if you go to patreon.com, become a constructor critic, that's $12 or more per month. That's $3 per episode. That's where you can get that. So, speaking of which, shout out to our newest patron, Alex. We appreciate you so much, Alex. It means the world to us. So, we know always improving this week, none of the regular stuff, because we have an in-depth episode on Modern. This is crazy, guys. We're doing a mega rankings. So since the banning of KCI, we have given points to every deck in every SCG Classic, every SCG Open, every Grand Prix, one Open, one Grand Prix, and every Modern Challenge on MTGO. And so the way this breaks down is they get 6 points for first, 5 points for second, 4 for top 4, 3 for top 8, and then 2 for top 32, which is the most that any of these events had listed. So with that being said, I believe there were... Let me just pull this up. So there were 37 decks got points, and there were 454 points available, if I'm not mistaken. So we're going to be going over the top 10 decks from this. And in 9th, 10th place, we have a tie. So we're going to start there. With 19 points, we have what many not too long ago considered the best deck in Modern. Mason's Baby Spirits. Mason, this is... I want to start by saying the biggest fall from grace here is two decks to me. Number one is Humans, which... you know, just completely has fallen off the map. And then number two to me is Spirits, which has, you know, climbed all the way down from the top five into barely making the top 10.
Yeah. So, just so people know, Humans had 12 points on the list. So it was coming in actual last of the top 16 in 16th place. Is that right, Spencer?
Yeah. It was the last deck with at least 10 points.
Yeah. Honestly, I think Spirits, when going into the RPTQ for the last format, I was kind of worried about the Arcollect deck. And now that KCI is gone, one of Spirits' best matchups have left the format, and some of its harder matchups in the form of Dredge and Blue-Red Phoenix are rising up, and then close matchups like Burn are also on the rise. So with those three decks really going up in popularity, it's not surprising for me to see Spirits go down. It is surprising that it actually placed higher than Humans. I thought they would kind of switch roles, and I thought when we'd be doing this episode, like, I was fully, like, expecting Spirits to be, like, 15th or 16th on the list. So I'm actually surprised it's as high as it is. But that deck just really needs, like, uninteractive metas, I think, to really shine and, excel, and just not where we're at currently.
I do think that Spirits is preying on some of the other, like, some of the big mana decks that people are also playing, though. So, like, while you look at some of the decks that do well later in this, big mana for a lot of those decks, people think have close to 50-50, if not good matchups against a few of them. So, you know, it kind of, and some of the other decks that are doing well. I share a different opinion than a lot of the Titan Shift players on, like, what we have good matchups against on here. But, you know, the deck that's tied with this deck is Tron. But before you move on to Tron, I just want to mention that, like, Tron, for example, is really good against, in my opinion, really good against the, you know, some of the best decks on this in these power rankings. And because of that, I would have expected that deck to be higher. Trey, what do you think about Tron and in Spirits?
Well, one of the things with Spirits is versus, you know, Spirits versus Humans, is that with Phoenix being one of the top performing decks, the Spirits at least can fight in the air. Right, Humans has, other than Mantis Rider, not a lot really going on to do combat at that phase and be in that place. And that Spirits, while it still suffers from getting everything bounced from Thing in the Ice and everything else, if they're on more of a Phoenix-centric draw, at least it can compete in combat. It can do something, as opposed to Humans, which is more of a ground pounder. And so I think that may have something to do with it being able to at least put up some showings, you know, in that regard. At least it can that access.
Yeah. 100%. Also, to mention on Tron just for a second, it's interesting. You know, John Stern won the what are they called
the MCQ.
The PPQs, the MCQ. Yeah, sorry, the MCQ last weekend at GP Toronto, I believe was the place. It's hard to know without coverage. But
oh my gosh, there was text coverage.
I know that John was there, and he won that. So it was actually surprising once again to see Tron solo, because in my mind I was like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. Like, I know he picked between the three decks he had, but I like his reasoning behind Tron. I figured other people might get there. But yeah, it's interesting to see Tron be this low. It does, like, kind of like you said, prey on some of the better matchups, including our number one spot, which I don't want to spoil. So,
you know, I just want to say this about this coverage thing, because I was going to tweet it, but I'll just say it on the podcast. If the number of people that complained about the lack of video coverage watched video coverage, they wouldn't have gotten rid of video coverage.
Well, that's not true. There's such a small majority of the community that complains, so that wouldn't have helped at
that's
all.
That's just not true. Like, that's just not true.
It might have added dozens of people to the viewership.
dozens of us.
You guys should see the ratios that Channel Fireball and Wizard Watts here are getting on Twitter. It's like this has 2,000 comments, and they're all bring back video coverage. It's like, none of you watched. There's no way all of you watched video coverage. I think Tron sits in a really interesting place. One of the things that I think about with Tron is, like, it's kind of the big mana deck that's just kind of consistent. And so I guess it and Titan Shift are both really consistent decks, but when you look at them, like, I could see myself being able to build Tron in a way to have really good matchups against, like, some of the up-and-coming decks, right? Whether it's, you know, playing main deck Thraktusks for burn, whether it's, you know, attacking Blue-Red Phoenix, stuff like that. I do think that Tron has an ability to kind of shift because there's such a large hive mind that's worked on it. There's so much technology that you can look into to build your Tron deck correctly. I kind of thought this deck might go a little bit higher.
Yeah, I agree. I echo that statement a lot.
Yeah, and the other part about it is that I always expect Tron to be in the top 10 no matter what the metagame looks like, because it does what the thing is that it does, like you said, very consistently. And the thing that it does is inherently powerful every time. Like, regardless of whether it has good matchups or bad matchups, if it just plays like Karn on 3, that's probably going to do a good thing, like, overall against most of the decks, even if it's a deck it would traditionally not have a great matchup against.
Yeah, that's true. It's hard to have two, like, it's the old joke, right? It's like hard to have too hard of a matchup when you go turn three Tron minus, or turn three Tron Karn minus, right? Like, that can win a lot of games. So,
yeah, and that doesn't happen every game, but it just means that you're going to have a fairly consistent win percentage performance with Tron, just because, like, the thing it does is more powerful than the thing that a lot of other decks do, regardless of what matchup it's against.
So, yeah, so in we also have a tie in 7th and 8th place with just 1 point more than our 9th and 10th place decks. And these are my favorite two decks in Modern. We have Blue-White Control, and we have Titan Shift. But I want to start with Blue-White Control, and I want to talk about the 4th place deck when we talk about this. Because for a lot of people, they're like, oh, so, like, I guess we're combining Jeskai Control and Blue-White Control. Actually, I did not. They both did so. If I had combined them, they actually would have been the second place deck. Jeskai Control came in fourth place with 28 points, and I can't decide if this makes me wrong about the control decks or not at this point. So, I don't know. Like, I don't know which is correct. LSV is telling me that Jeskai Control is good. Every match I've ever played with Jeskai Control felt horrible. And I find that when I play Jeskai Control, it just completely depends on how good Electrolyze is. And to me, if I want to play an Electrolyze deck with Snapcaster Mage, I would just rather play Teemer Scapeshift. So it's hard for me to ever get behind Jeskai Control, because I usually find that Anchor of the Gods is better than Supreme Verdict. I usually find that Scapeshift is a better win condition than, especially now that I have Jace the Mind Sculptor in both decks, like, it's just Scapeshift is a better win condition than Teferi. Like, I'm going to say this. I think I am wrong about Jeskai Control. And I don't know where I'm getting it wrong, because this deck consistently does well. And players consistently do well with it. And it could be that, like, oh, you know, it's Modern. Like, you play the deck that you know. But it wouldn't be that hard for those same players to do well with Blue-White Control.
Yeah, for sure. So you go try.
Well, I think that it comes down to, like, I think that one of the key points that you're talking about there is the difference between being proactive and reactive, right? You're talking about scape shift being better win condition, these other things. It's because you're putting your opponent to the test every time. And that the Jeskai control deck, while it's in a smaller way, does that more, I think, than the blue-white control deck does, because it has more reach, it can burn, it can kill people in a different way than just the blue-white control deck does. Like, the blue-white control deck has to take kind of the same role and the same game plan every time, every game. And the Jeskai control deck can pivot depending on what your draw is or what the game situation is, and can be a more proactive deck overall than the blue-white control deck can. And I think that that kind of versatility is the reason that it gets pushed ahead a lot of the times.
Yeah, it's really funny that you say that. You're kind of I think that you and I might have a fundamentally different belief in what Teemer or Scapeshift does. Because while you can play a proactive game with both Jeskai control and Teemer, it's funny because one of the decks that wasn't included in this, because I tried to keep all the decks separate, there was a Brain to Light Scapeshift deck that also did well that's not in these results. And I think a lot of people think of Teemer Scapeshift closer to the Brain to Light Scapeshift decks. And to me, when I think of Teemer Scapeshift, I just think of a control deck that casts Scapeshift to win sometimes. And, you know, that casts Farseek and things like that. And the thing that, like, when I'm really glad that Blue-White and Titan Shift are together, because to me the one of the beautiful things about Titan Shift is that it can play the control game in so many matchups, and blue white control is just the like purest control deck Modern has ever seen. We're not talking about like blue white control from like, you know, a year and a half ago. Like, this blue white control deck now is this is a control deck. Like, you are a Terminus deck. You are you're playing Hieroglyphic Illuminations. Like, you are not messing around as far as being a control deck. And I wonder where it, like, if we were to break down archetypes, right? You know, big mana control, aggro slash burn combo. You know, I wonder where different decks would sit, because it actually seems like control decks are making up the largest percentage of points. And then it's aggro decks, but it's really interesting to me that these two decks sit together, and they're still not that far off from some other decks. But I guess my point is kind of close to what Trey's saying, though, is maybe the proactiveness that I like in Teemer Scapeshift is the thing that people like in Jeskai.
Exactly, that's what I was gonna say. Yeah. Also, just to comment on what you said, like, if you broke down the archetypes, I can't remember exactly if it was second and third or third and fourth, but when KCI got banned, they showed some of the win percentages, and Jeskai and Blue White, I think it was either second and third or third and fourth highest win percentages, behind KCI.
Blue White had, yeah, it was top eights. So Blue White had the second most top eights, and then mm-hmm. Jeskai Control had the fourth most top eights.
That's what it was. Okay, I knew it was something weird between that. Yeah, so, like, it's pretty clear that, like, these decks are at least reasonable. And I love – I'm a meme. Like, I like the meme. Like, it's fun to make fun of, like, you're playing these Jeskai decks and you're playing these blue-white decks and make fun of them, make fun of coverage and all that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, you know, Modern's, like, either a turn 4 format or a turn 14 format, right? It kind of goes between those two. And the Jeskai control deck, and to a lesser extent, I think the blue-white control deck, in the current format at least, they make the games go towards that turn 14. And they're really good when the games go that long. And I think that's kind of why they're succeeding. I think, you know, kind of like what you two kind of got to there with the Jeskai being more proactive than Blue-White, I think that's the reason why, like, you nailed it on the head there. Like, that's what they like about that deck over Blue-White. And I also think it lets them win more games, because they can be like, oh, Lord, I got to do something. Bolt, snap, bolt you. Attack, attack. Oh, thank goodness, Cryptic, kill you. You know what I mean? So that's kind of my opinion on Jeskai. I think the deck is good. I like to make fun of it, but... You know, it's a good deck.
You know what's interesting is that blue-white control and Jeskai control make up the exact same percentage on MTG Goldfish right now. They're both at 2.28%. And it's funny because for months there, blue-white control was like the best deck in Modern, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know that the format has changed in a way that blue-white control can't attack, but it could have changed in a way that more favors Jeskai control, if that makes sense. Like, I'm willing to just say I'm wrong about this, and when I'm playing these decks, you know, this is better. But even if we look at, like, the second place list from the Baltimore Classic, this list is almost identical to one that I've played. I actually think this might actually. I might have played this exact 60. I haven't looked at the sideboard yet, but I might have actually just played this exact 60 before. And
yeah,
and you know that says a lot to me about like how good Blue Eye Control is. That it's cards, right? The core of its deck, right? Jace the Mind Sculptor, Teferi, you know, instant speed draw spells in the form of often hieroglyphic illuminations, depending on the number that you're playing. And then, you know, some interactive spells is really good still. And also, Sotera's Kanta is still kind of the bee's knees. I haven't looked yet if Jeskai Control is adopted that yet. And we'll talk about that when we get there. But, yeah, mm-hmm. I think Blue Eye Control is here to stay. And I agree with the Wizards when, like, people are like, we don't really want to unban Stoneforge Mystic when Blue Eye Control was, like, at one time, like, was the best deck in Modern 3 months ago. Like, that's not really within our wheelhouse right now, guys. I agree with them on that.
Yeah, I don't think we should advance in Forge Mystic in the foreseeable future. I think the control decks are pretty good right now. And I also think, like, it's kind of like what you said there for a second. Like, Blue-Eye Control decks are the same 60 they were, like, 3 or 4 months ago when you were playing them, right? And it could just be that, like, we don't have the information on Modern right now. Like, the format's changed and standard's so cool, we're looking at that. And people are like, I don't know, I've been playing this. And there could just be a configuration of Blue-Eye that's like, oh, wait, this solves the problems. Because Blue-Eye has a lot of the answers to the problems, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, and there hasn't been anything that's jumped out of the recent sets to be like, oh, that should definitely be something that gets added in.
Exactly. It's like so one of the things that's not in our top 10, we have Jund that came in 11th with 18 points, right? If I had combined it with the green black midrange deck, it actually would have made the top 10. And it's funny because like we have The Rock making up multiple top eights at a Grand Prix recently, and Jun just still crushing the SEG circuit. Like Assassin's Trophy did in fact impact Modern in a real way. Like it actually did make an impact. I mean, these green black rock black decks are playing up to three of them. But that's not towards the mid-range decks and not like the control decks.
Yeah, two-minute instant speed vindicates good. Who knew?
Yeah, Jun exactly. Yu was saying it made Tron a winnable match. Like, it was a favorable matchup. Like, they were happy to play against Tron before, you know, they rest in peace Watsi life. But
I mean, and it answers tons of problem deck, like having these main deck answers for Teferi, which, you know, had turned into one of the best cards in Modern for a minute there. There's the changes to the format are certainly definitely not for blue-white, other than, you know, it getting Teferi and Jace unbanned kind of culminated into a real deck. So let's talk about Titan Shift really quickly before we move on. It also came in with 20 points. I have a sleeved-up Titan Shift deck right in front of me. How far off do you think this deck list is from the deck list the top 8ed? How many cards?
Like, 3.
Oh, so many more.
Oh, really?
Oh, my gosh. Guys, Titan Shift is it's going through a transformation to attack this format. You know, it's playing Flame Slashers now to attack the thing in the ices. It's playing there are versions that are playing Courser of Kruphix again. So it's funny, a couple GP Vegases ago when I was playing this deck, I had some 2-of sleeved up, and they were this card, Wood Elves, and Course of Kruphix, and trying to decide between them. And I kind of just looked at the results back then, and I was like, all right, so I've been playing Course of Kruphix for a long time now in my Volokit decks. And the reason for that is kind of what I said, is that for a long time, Volokit was a control deck. The people had started to move Titan Shift towards more of a kind of this combo-y all-in deck, right? And I kind of was, I just said, you know what, I'm going to trust the Hive Mind, and it served me well for a long time. But I think that Titan Shift, if we're looking at deck lists, is trying to kind of be in the middle right now. It's playing main deck Anger of the Gods and Sweltering Suns again. It's it has a split to try and attack the humans decks. It's playing main deck Flame Slash, more removal than ever. It's playing Courser of Kruphix. Like, this deck is turning back into the kind of the grindier version of the deck from, I think, 2 years ago now. And as somebody who plays a ton of this deck, this just makes me want to splash white again, Mason.
You gotta splash that white.
Yeah, I legitimately think that, like, if we're going to go a more controlling route with the deck, playing Nahiri, playing Rest in Peace, playing Leyline of Sanctity makes a lot of sense for this deck.
I really like the idea of Leyline of Sanctity. You know, Burn's doing pretty well right now in Modern. And that's like a good card to have in there, and it's also good against a couple other matchups in the format. I could totally be talked into playing a white splash in Titan Shift right now. It's very interesting.
Yeah, I had a chance to play a modern 2K this weekend, and that's what I was going to bring. I was actually going to skip the standard one. I was going to go back to my old favorite, Nia Escape Shift. And fortunately, I have to go to Vegas, so, you know.
Oh, how unlucky.
But yeah,
I think
I think if we look, I'll pour one out for you there, buddy. I think if we look at Escape Shift right now, I think it's going more towards the controlling version again, rather than the kind of all in combo versions that we've seen recently.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense to me too, with like what the decks, like I'm looking at over here, the decks that are doing well in Corsair, like buys you time against all those decks and gives you time to like bridge the gap to get to your powerful end game. And it makes sense. I haven't been paying that much attention. I've been playing a different Titan deck, so I haven't been on top of the Titan ship, so I didn't realize it had changed a whole bunch. I saw that Through the Breach was doing really well recently, but
there were no breach lists in the power rankings.
Oh, really? None of the I thought I saw Becky retweet someone who won like a classic or something, or did well in a classic with it Through the Breach, but I could be mistaken. It also could have been before the banning. It's time is an illusion of the mind.
If you do want to know what's doing well in those decks, Becky's definitely a good person to be following. Any thoughts on the shift in Titan Shift, the Corsair prefix coming back, the main deck Flame Slash, stuff like that, Trey?
I mean, I think the stuff makes sense. I mean, you've got to, there's, with the KCI leaving, right, then there's a lot more creatures and things that are going on. And so being able to combat that stuff more directly seems to make sense, as opposed to having to be as linear as possible in order to try to race that kind of a setup.
Yeah. It makes me wonder, like, is it time to go all the way back in? You know, I haven't given up yet, fam. I still got my Chandra sleeved up. Like, I wanna be like a green red control, but in the right matchups, just be like ramp, 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 kill you. So, I mean, this is my baby. This is something I think about way too much. So we could probably move on. But I agree with what Trey's saying. I think that it was funny because somebody was like, you know, it was my old roommate Gavin, who I used to play tons of Magic with, was like, they're playing Corsair again. And like, it's funny because like my last Modern tournament, I finally sleeved up my Acid Mosses, and I like had fallen in love with that card and was like, oh yeah, like this is the future. This is the future of this deck. And like the format already shifted again. So it's funny that people like are like, Modern doesn't change. And it's like, apparently it does, because people are playing Corsair Grievix again. I will say before we move on, I think Flame Slash makes a lot of sense for this deck. I think that when I tested the matchup, I got into a conversation with Becky on Twitter about this. And I was like, you know, I found that I was losing like pretty close to 100% of the games on the draw versus this deck against the Phoenix deck, you know. And she talked about, you know, we're playing three main deck relics. The lists that are doing the top of the GP didn't play have any relics in the main deck, but I would continue with the main deck relics and things like that. And it's interesting to just kind of see like people trying to figure out the way to build this deck to attack the meta, which kind of speaks to me as once again that these Titan Shift decks are more of control decks than they are proactive decks like people think. I think that they adjust with the format because you're controlling the deck through different means. So
for sure. I also think that goes to say like why Modern's so good, right? Is that like you can play this green red put all your lands and play deck, right? And it's like, no, actually that's a control deck and we play a bunch of sweet one ofs that change the matchup completely. Lol.
They're like, not one ofs, but
you know what I mean? We're like, yeah, like we switch a couple spots here, a couple spots there, and like it completely changes the way everything plays out.
Alright. Yep. So So we're up to what? Spencer wrong about one thing so far, and that was I think I'm probably wrong about blue white. We're gonna go to Spencer just definitely wrong about number two. This is I'm just gonna say
I'm so excited to see your opinion on this.
I literally am so confused.
Oh, you don't understand why Grixis War is number six on the rankings?
I do not understand. So coming in at number six, we have Wurr at 21 points. And I can bind Grixis and Blue-Red for what it's worth.
Sure.
What is happening?
Well, so they can go and look through their deck, mm-hmm. and they can get an artifact and put it into play.
They can
play.
Put in Snaring Bridge and play. Yeah. I understand
whatever
that.
Whatever one is good for whatever deck they're playing against. Mm-hmm. And they basically... It's like the only deck that gets to play pre-sideboarded, right? Like, it plays all of these cards that would otherwise be sideboard cards for everything else, and then it can go and get them in the matchups where it matters. And so you just get, like, free hoser wins in, like, weird situations that you wouldn't otherwise be able to have anything going on. because you just like, well, I have this hate card that makes your deck not good, mm-hmm. and good luck. And it has a really effective thing where, like, when you're doing that in game ones, especially when your opponent can't interact with it, then it can be effective. Again, I don't particularly like these decks, but that is a thing. I can see the path of, like, how it gets to the point that they're winning on a consistent basis.
But this is, like, a lot of winning. And also, I think most of these decks are actually playing green right now, too, Mason. I think,
yeah, to get Ancient Stirrings.
Yeah, they get...
They're basically four-color war decks.
Yeah. So they get these... All right. So, hold on. I want to say, I am a firm believer that the Chalice of the Void is a good card. And here's the thing, is to me, this just seems like the next flavor of Eldrazi Tron.
Oh, wow. That's a disrespect to the war deck. Eldrazi Tron's like here.
I actually agree. I think this is a significantly better deck than Eldrazi Tron. Like, substantially better. But I agree with that statement. I've played against this deck a lot. I remember the first time I played against it, it was for 5-0 on an online modern PTQ. And I was, like, in a video chat with people as we were all playing, and I was like, I have no idea what my opponent's doing. He just cast this. And Michael Hinderacher's like, oh, like, he's playing War of Invention and, like, shoots me a deck list. And I was like, how does this deck win? and I beat it, and then I played against it two more times. One of them was against Master of this deck, for what it's worth, Jody Keith, where we didn't get to finish our match because my teammates had already lost at the Grand Prix. But man, like, I am just wrong about this deck. So there's a few things that I know I'm wrong because of. I think Welding Jar is substantially better than I think it is. So I think that's probably, like, the number one thing that I'm wrong about. I think that I know how good Crucible of Worlds is, and they're probably playing it in matchups different than the ones I'm thinking of. There's no way, because they just, like, it's good in every matchup with this deck, right?
Yeah. I would say that the trick to the Welding Jar is because their cards are so powerful in the matchups they are, that's what makes Welding Jar so good.
Right. What I'm saying is I'm probably underappreciating how good. I know I'm wrong about this deck. Like, I thought this deck was, like, a flash-in-the-pan, horrible BS deck. And I'm saying, like, as people have worked on this deck and added Ancient Stirrings and worked on its sideboard, I think I'm wrong, and the deck is probably just good.
Yeah, I didn't think you were saying it was bad. I was just kind of adding on to it for maybe listeners at home who didn't get the why Welding Jar would be good. But yeah, I think this deck is good. I think it's one of the better prison decks, you know, and Trey, like, kind of half joked about how you can play all these sideboard cards main deck. But it really is just, like, the best Ensnaring Bridge deck right now. And Modern's mostly a creature format. And if we look at a lot of these deck lists, they're either creature decks or control decks. And this deck can do things against both of them. And so it has a little bit of a clunkiness to it. I think that's why we don't see it convert quite as much. But I expect it to get better. I actually think there's a better artifact deck than this in the format, but this hasn't had time to have the results yet. I think it's going to be a couple months. But I think the war deck is really good.
So I do like the four Glimmer Void, four Spire of Industry mana base. That's the hotness. What is the deck?
I appreciate that chef's kiss.
what is the deck, Mason? The artifact deck you think is so good?
Oh, so Canister recently tweeted the Symbolons.
Oh my
deck.
Gosh.
But no. I don't think that version of deck is actually that great. What I think is, I think it proves that the shell that Mirror Retriever, Scrap Trawler, Psy is good, like, outside of KCI, and there was debate as to whether it was or not. And I think that proves it. I think that's going to get people to explore that shell more. And I think we're going to find something that's maybe a mixture of the two.
Something Scythoctress ends up getting banned. That would not surprise me.
Yeah, like, I think that shell is powerful, and this is like, hey, we could play with these, like, pretty terrible cards, and maybe that is the best version, just needs to be tuned more, but we can play with these really terrible win condition and cards, and we can win games. So if we give this deck, like, a year, what's going to happen? And the last time I felt this way was Phoenix, and the time before that was Humans. So I'm just trusting my gut on this one.
Yeah. So back to War for just a second. I think the thing that I always thought this deck was bad because of was because of its matchup against, like, counter spells is actually pretty rough. And I'm kind of looking over the deck list. I haven't played Modern since... I guess I played Volokit once, but I haven't played Modern in a while outside of some Grand Prix. And I think that nothing that I'm seeing has changed my opinion about, like, its matchup against control decks, which is actually probably why it misses the top five. Like, yeah. That actually makes sense. Like, this deck is really good against creature decks. I actually don't know how creature decks beat it. And then, you know, it has a rough matchup against, you know, Negate.
Yep.
Yeah, but I think that's kind of the story of Modern, right? That, like, the metagame is generally so diverse, and there's so many different type of decks. Like, you're going to have something that's a whole that you're going to have a rough time against. And it's just the nature of the format overall. And this deck has just kind of placed that's its hole, right? Like, that's where it is, and they're willing to, like, take a bath during that.
Yeah, I think so, too. I have not played from either side of this matchup what it's like against Burn, but I would be curious to see. I mean, it's playing four Spellskites in the sideboard, plus, like...
It is Witchbane in the main, right?
Yeah, Witchbane in the main. Yeah. So, like... It clearly needs something for the Burn matchup. It's probably Witchbane or being the... Go ahead.
I was going to say, I saw a list recently tweeted that did well in an event that had the black improvise minus X game life equal to X.
Battle of the Bridge.
Yes. So people are playing that as a way. So I think that matchup is probably rough, and they probably lean a lot on, like, here's an early Witchbane Orb and get a bridge after that.
Well, it's kind of hard, right? Because, like, you put an early Witchbane Orb out even post-board, and it's like... That's nice. Here's my Cinder Vines or my Destructive Revelries, like
my Eidolon of the Revel.
Yeah,
like that's pretty good against your Ensnaring Bridge plan.
Yeah,
so yeah, the matchup's probably rough.
Yeah, I can't really bring back these Pyrite Spell Bombs or stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I mean, it has some kind of what Trey said. Like it's better in the format when it's trying to attack like kind of. You know, different decks. My understanding is it has a very good humans matchup, and that was part of its rise to popularity.
Yeah, it's a good humans. I've played against it with spirits before, and it was hard there too, and I had Spellqueller.
Yeah.
So I can only imagine humans is miserable.
Yeah.
And I think it's just like you said, I think it's any creature decks overall, right? Just like whatever it is that's trying to win through combat is going to have a hard time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things that is harder about Modern since we started doing this podcast is, you know, I played so much Magic when this podcast started. And I even played a ton of Modern. I played a ton of Legacy. I played it on a Vintage. The thing about Modern is it's gotten, like, Legacy size. Like, 37 decks got points. And honestly, there's not... 30 of them were probably viable. Like, you know, Ad Nauseam is on this list, right? Like, that's a deck that I thought was, like, Garbo 3 years ago. And now I'm like, no, that can just win a GP. Like, I'm quite sure it could just win a GP. You know, Fate as Foretold was on this list, and that's a deck that's like coming back. Living End was making a comeback, like, and we've seen those decks top 8 Grand Prix and stuff before. So Modern definitely has gotten to the place where I'm just not going to be able to play every deck, and you know, it probably means I have to go into research mode a little bit more when we're doing these episodes. Let's talk about the top 5. We're finally there. You have Grisha Shadow coming in at 24 points. I got into, like, this huge debate with a player. It knocked me out of top 8 my last tournament when I was playing Titan Shift. And it was really fun. I was like, yeah, this is, like, by far my worst matchup in Modern. And this player that's, like, GZ down for me was like, oh, I literally can't beat Titan Shift with this deck. I was like, I literally can't beat the card Stubborn Denial, so I don't know how you can't beat me.
Me and my Procher invite back you up, Spencer. Ooh, wish they didn't get paired against that. Yeah, I think that matchup's pretty hard. Fast Clock plus Disruption is normally good against combo deck on turn 5.
Well, I think like it's funny because I think Grixis Shadow is good against all the big mana decks. I think it's good against Amulet. I think it's good against Tron. I think it's good against. It's funny because like Tron players say that they have a good matchup versus it, but like I just watch people get dumpstered. I don't know.
Yeah, well some people.
Do Tron players ever say they have a bad matchup against something? Like, I've never seen Tron players be like, man, I just can't beat this. They're like, we're favored against everything.
That's actually how I feel about other Volokut players. I'm just like, we don't have a good matchup against that, man. Like, it's a bad matchup.
I've been told by Twitter that Grixis Death Shadow has no good matchups, yet it just won the most recent Grand Prix. So I'm confused as to what the truth is.
Dude, people say that about Dex. So Grixis Shadow, I would assume it's... like, actually the only good creature deck it could against Worm for what it's worth. Like, it is like, it's funny because I was a Jund player for a very long time. I, like, my first PTQ top 8 ever was with Jund. My third PTQ top 8 ever was with Jund. Like, Modern was my format when it first happened. You know, I have played many, many, many modern tournaments with mid-range decks for a long time. And you could not convince me to play Jund over Shadow right now. Like, I just think that... I think that it does everything that you would want in those style of decks, and also gets probably one of the best cards in Modern in the form of Stubborn Denial. Like, Stubborn Denial is actually broken.
Right, but it's like fundamentally a Delver deck, right? Like, that's like structurally what it's similar to, in the sense that just plays a threat and then defend that threat, and, you know, through discard and disruption and counterspells, just gets it across the finish line. It also helps that all of the threats are like one mana 5/5s or bigger.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, when I play the deck, it more reminds me of Jund than it does of Delver. I played a lot of both decks. But I think that it is kind of a mash between the two. It's like taking the fundamentals of a Jund deck and applying a tempo game plan to them. And I think that's why it for so long was so hard to beat for people. This is like, do I attack this as a mid-range deck or do I attack this as a Delver deck? And it's like, you can try either way. Like,
it kind of depends on their draw.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Like, this deck is really, really good. And I am not surprised to see it making a comeback in Modern.
Yeah, I feel like for it to be a Gen deck, it needs more clunky 4-drops.
Yeah, does the deck even have a 4-drop?
No, it's like 7-drops or something, right?
Yeah. 1, 2, 7, the old curve.
I think... Oh, go ahead, Mason.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think you hit it on... Like, you two hit the nail on the head again, where it's like... It has Jund aspects of plays a Delver game plan once it gets a creature on the board. I think that's really powerful in Modern, especially like when it curves out right. It's very hard to beat when the deck curves out correctly if you're not playing like just a bunch of creatures that can interact with it. So,
yeah, I think that one of the things that has kind of impressed me about this deck, for a long time, I was like touting the Sultai versions of this deck. Like, I really, really liked them. Is Pascal 3000 Pascal Maynard?
I think, but I don't want to...
I think so, but I'm not...
I wouldn't put my life on it.
He just 7-0'd with the deck as well, but it looks like a pretty close version of other things. One of the things that has always impressed me about this deck is, like, its ability to kind of change its one-mana cards, right? You know, whether it's starting to play... Whether it plays extra Inquisitions main. You know, the version that he just 7-0'd the challenge with had Faithless Looting in the main. And the number of Snapcasters that it plays. And it's funny because, or if it plays Mishra Bobble Roller or not. And it's funny because people are like, oh, this deck has locked in its 72 cards. And it's like, no, it's not. Like, this deck changes so much, but people kind of don't respect it. The number of lands it plays changes all the time. You know, whether it's playing Ceremonious Rejection changes all the time. Whether it's playing main deck Liliana or not. Whether it's playing Tamer Battle Rage or not. Like, it's actually really hard to play against this deck because it morphs into so many different decks. How many Stubborn Denials it's playing. It is... I think that people have, like, gone to a few things. I think that you can say that they're going to play 4 Thoughtseize and 1 to 2 Inquisitions. They'll have 4 Death Shadow. They'll have 4 Street Wraith and 4 Gormag Angular. They'll have 4 Fatal Push unless they're playing Lightning Bolt. Like, it's just... It's...
Well, also, some people are trying Terramander. I don't know if you've seen that. Like, I've seen some 5-0s with Terramander in there, too.
Yeah, that
people
makes
sense. People are trying weird... Yeah. A lot of crazy stuff can happen.
Yeah, it regularly will lose to whatever the supposed outdated version of this deck is while that's going on. It's like, well, nobody plays Tamer Battle Rage anymore, so I'm not going to play around Tamer Battle Rage, and now I'm dead to Tamer Battle Rage.
Yeah, it looks like the 7-0 version might have just been the first place version from the... So he 7-0'd right after the deck took first.
Love it. Smart. Get while the iron's hot. Yeah, I think that's also kind of like, you kind of hit on something, and you've said it earlier too about Titan Shift, but like, I think it happens a lot in Modern. People think like, oh, this deck is this, and in reality, like, it changes up like a little bit, and Shadow is a more like, it can do it a lot more than other decks, but a lot of the decks we're gonna talk about, except for our top two, really change up cards a lot.
Oh, and so for what it's worth, the number two deck, I just combined all of them because there's so many versions of them.
Sure, but yeah, that's fair. But like, you know what I mean? Like, kind of the main game plan is pretty similar there. You can kind of see what's coming. So
I think that people like to be. Maybe I shouldn't say it that other way. I was about to insult Modern players.
Ooh, insult them! They love it. Modern players aren't passionate.
I think that a lot of players like to feel really smart. So they will definitively say things about the modern format, when in reality, in Magic, it's really important to be able to adjust. And the players that start to succeed are the players that are doing that, right? The people that are like, okay, maybe we should bring back Mishra's Bauble if we're doing X or Y. Maybe we should make our deck this level of speed faster for this matchup. And kind of understanding when that's correct with a deck like Grixis Shadow, I think is really important.
Yeah, and it's another key piece of it, too, that I think that a thing people overlook a lot is that it doesn't always mean that you have to innovate in some new way that's never been done. Sometimes it's right to go back to an older version of the deck or an older strategy in relation to the deck because it's the right time for that thing to happen. And that, you know, people get so concerned oftentimes of like shoving new cards in a deck because they're like, well, we're going to do something different. And it's like, well, it might be right like to go back to, you know, Team or Battle Rage, or like with when you were talking about Titan Shift, like go back to Corsair, like going back to some of those older technologies when they cycle back up again, as it being an appropriate time for that, for the same reasons that they were a good idea the first time, is oftentimes a good way to quote-unquote innovate for whatever the deck is at the time.
Exactly, and that's why Amulet Titan's the best deck in the format with no bad matchups, because every weekend it's a different 75, it seems. I can never stay on top of it. They just change the deck every single weekend.
Primeval Titan is my enemy, and I will never play with it.
All right, well, there you go.
Oh, that's just a strong stance.
Yeah.
It's like in my top two favorite cards of all time.
Yeah, I'm versus it forever.
That's like a losing battle.
Yeah. You don't have to tell me. I have the results to show that that's a losing battle. All right, I know. We all pick which ditch we die in, and that's mine.
How many Inkbomb Nexus have killed you?
Oh, boy.
Anyway, let's go on to number four. We kind of already said what it was, but it is, in fact, Jeskai Control. And as I suspected, these decks have adopted the search for Ezcanta plan. So they are in they have also adopted, man, they've planted so many good blue white control cards in the last couple of years, and then also on Van Chase.
Yeah, it's making it really hard for me to complain that they don't print good spells, only good creatures, when all of these standard spells are in all of these eternal format decks.
There's just Teferi and Search for Ezcanta. I mean, Hieroglyphic Illuminations was in standard like a week ago. Like, what is happening?
Yeah, but old players, we like to complain about the standard spells, but they keep getting better, and it's a problem. I want the complaint equity.
Trey, you're a writer, so I'm going to help you out here. You don't need to add adjectives like old. You can just say players like to complain, and it saves it saves you time on the screen. So you might want to take that one for your like next movie.
Yeah, sure.
I actually really like decks like Jeskai Control and Blue White right now, and there's a really specific reason that I like it. So I think that Blue Eye Control and Jeskai have an ability to like find their one ofs really easily. So a card like Timely Reinforcements just gains a ton of equity. Just really easy to find it. Once you do, it swings the matchup by a substantial margin. You have tons of removal for their creatures like Eidolon and Snapcaster Mage, regardless of the version that you're playing, whether you're playing Lightning Bolt, whether you're playing Path to Exile. If you're playing Jeskai, they're playing four of both of them right now. You know, just really dumpstering on those creature decks. But at the same time, I believe the best sideboard card in all of Magic, even though people use it wrong all the time, like so much, unless you're playing against Tom Ross, is Surgical Extraction.
I knew it!
Like, that card is so freaking good. And the Snapcaster Surgical Plan just like decimates some strategies in Modern. And that was probably, you know, one of the coolest things that you can do in a Modern is just that plan. So.
Yeah, but so all of these control decks, like any of the white based decks, like they just get access to all of the best sideboard cards. Like if you want to beat out certain decks, like you can get total hosers against their whole deck. Like you can get Stony Silence, you can get Rest in Peace, you can get some of these cards that are actual great cards against these other decks that some of the other decks don't have access to. So I think it is a thing that like makes the control decks stay viable is because they have access to actual hate cards.
Yeah, I want to go back to another thing that I was wrong about. Kind of looking at these Jeskai lists, other than like the because so Seth Manfield, he had done well with the Jeskai list that he got from Brad Nelson that he kind of talked about on the podcast. And one of the things that he talked about was how good Electrolyze was at that point. And kind of looking through a lot of these lists, they're not playing that many Electrolyzes right now.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting when you said you think it lives and dies by Electrolyze. Because I have friends that really like Electrolyze in the deck, and I'm always, like, not impressed with it. I feel like I never kill anything with it.
Well, I think Seth and Brad were playing three.
Well, Seth and Brad are masters, so if they're playing it, ship it to me. But
it's funny, because it looks like a lot of these lists are just playing one right now. And that surprises – I would have a hard time believing – I have to test it before I say anything. Like, I have a hard time with Jeskai. I don't know why, but I think I'm wrong about it. I think there's something to it. Go ahead.
I have a question. Do you think it's just cards that deal damage to target player? Because last week on Constructed Criticism, you talked about how you can't play a mono red deck, right? You're having all these problems there. Maybe just deal damage to target player that isn't from Valakut is just, like, foreign. Is that the problem? Did we get to the crux?
I don't think so, because like I really love Counterburn. It's like one of my favorite decks of all time.
All right, it was worth a shot.
Like, is it like my one of my favorite guilds?
But that, is it?
Something can be your favorite, and you can have a problem with it.
No, I don't think it's that. I think the problem is like a lot of times you start executing your Counterburn plan with this deck, and then like. You don't actually have enough burn to execute it. And then you have... So here's the thing. The real crux of the problem is... I was helping a patron test the other week. And we were talking about Celestial Colonnade. He's like, should I cut it? I've never activated it. And I said, I've also never really activated it. But it's because by the time you're going to win, they concede before you can activate it. And the problem with Jeskai is you have to activate it. Like, they're going to make you activate it. And go ahead.
I was gonna say, I think LSV and Ben Stark cut their Colonnage from their Jeskai control decks.
They did. It's because like it's like the most. It's crazy. Well, Blue Eye Control plays four of them, dude. And it was funny. I think it was before the Grand Prix, the Modern Team Grand Prix that I was playing with Matt Michael. Like, how many times have you activated your Colonnade? And I was like, once. They're like, oh, like, did you win that game? I was like, yeah, they conceded when I activated it. I don't know. The thing is, though, is that a lot of the things that I like about Blue-White Control have been adopted into these Jeskai decks. So, maybe Lightning Helix is the truth, and I just need to get on board with it.
I like Lightning Helix against a lot of the matchups, or specifically one matchup we're going to talk about in a second, but some of the other ones we talked about here and some of the lower ones. Maybe just need to go in open heart, open mind, Jeskai, and just play an event. Yeah. Play three Electrolyzes like your co-host, Seth Manfield, and, you know, see how it goes.
I'm really proud of you right now, Nathan.
And you also get to play Anger of the Gods, which is an advantage you have over the blue-white decks, because Anger of the Gods, real good.
Sure. Yeah, like you said earlier, right? Like, Anger of the Gods is better than you found some of the other board wipes, so. And they do play that on the sideboard a lot of the time, so. Boom.
Yeah, I'm clearly wrong. Like, this deck is doing really, really well. So I'm absolutely willing to I got a lot of MTGO credit lying around, like a lot. Maybe I'll go. I'm sure this deck costs like $12 on MTGO right now, so maybe I'll go pick it up.
Weird flex, but okay.
Weird flex and weird dagger on MTGO. I can't go after commentary and coverage, but I'll say this before we move on. I think you're not the only one, Spencer. You know, I like to joke about it too, but I think a lot of people don't give these control decks credit. And like you said, if you just put control as an archetype, it's like, I think, third on this list.
Well, it's funny because if you had put blue, like everyone was saying Blue-White Control was the best deck like 3 months ago or maybe a little bit longer than that.
Yeah, probably four or five. Yeah. So like, but people just like to rag on it, right? And it kind of goes to like with a half joke I made earlier where it's turn four, turn 14. These decks really do make the game go long. And when it gets to turn 14, these decks are really unbeatable. And they do a good job.
I just don't want to draw a lightning bolt on turn 14, man. Like, I just don't want that.
You've maneuvered the game masterfully to the point where that's lethal. See, that's the trick. Yeah. There you go.
You know, I think that, like, there are a few things that I'll kind of jump back in with. One, EE seems sweet. So, like, getting to play EE, I actually like Oh man, I can't believe I'm about to say this. This is another thing that I could be wrong about. But maybe I do like the idea of guys missing draft post board if I'm playing Jeskai. Right? Crazy.
That sounds hot. I like the sounds of that.
Yeah. I also like to call these decks never lunch.
Yeah, they never get lunch.
Yeah.
I don't believe that. I see Jonathan Ross walk around the SCG hall a lot very quickly. He wins quick and loses quick. That I can respect. So,
all right, number three, we have coming in with 37 points. We have
with a
blue
bullet.
Red Phoenix. So I'm going to say this. Another thing I'm probably wrong about. I don't understand why people are playing Young Pyromancer in this deck. I legitimately don't get it.
Well, if you're a patron of $5 or more of Even Odds Podcast, we did a whole episode about this literally 2 days ago.
Only episode about Young Pyromancer in this deck?
We did Arclight Phoenix, and we talked about Young Pyromancer for maybe 3 or 4 minutes of the 25-minute episode, so it takes up a significant chunk of it. But we were talking about how like there's so many different things you need to try, and it's just not – like it's the one that at least takes a second, right? Because it's like your game plan is cast a lot of spells.
People are like posting like, I believe this list is 100% correct, and it has one Young Pyromancer, and I'm like, that can't be true.
Like, I love the idea that one Young Pyromancer is right.
Like that makes no sense to me.
I just want to state, one Young Pyromancer might be right, and we might look like an idiot in a year, but at this moment, I love the idea that it is just someone's out there like, one Young Pyromancer is the perfect number.
If anyone ever tells you that anything in Magic with absolute certainty, they are absolutely wrong. Guaranteed.
Oh, yeah, man. Don't let a certain host of the First Strike podcast hear you say that.
What's up, misplaced? So, what I was going to say is... I really like these decks. I think they're really cool, and there's so many different things you can do. And I think, like, I talked about it earlier with the artifact deck, and I still think it's true of this deck. Like, that shell is really good, and I think we can splash colors. I think there are different things you can do, and I think there are so many cards to explore that we won't know what is even close to the best for another 6 months. Just that, let's like, the way to which things change and move.
You know what's... go ahead.
It's a thing that Mason and I talked about before on the other episode, was that because the core is so good and because it does the thing that it does so consistently and it will win games just by doing that, it actually makes it difficult to determine what those other spots should be, because you just most of the time don't need them when you're winning, right? And so then it's like, okay, are these accomplishing anything? I've seen Pyromancer Ascension, we've seen Young Pyromancer, we've seen Crackling Drake, and it's like, okay, are these things actually contributing to me winning in any games, or am I just doing the other thing that's so powerful that those slots like don't matter half the time?
I think that Kale Thompson's list is just 100% correct, because that way he can surgical extraction his in effect opponents, which just seems like big game to me.
That just makes sense to me. If they don't have pump spells, how do they win? Like, that's just...
One of the things that I think is really interesting, like, is this deck actually got more cards. Like, there's a lot of lists playing 4 Terramander, 2 Terramander. Like, people are figuring this out. Also, Crackling Drake seeing modern play, I just got that card 100% wrong. Like, it was funny because, like, I like took second at a PPTQ. Shout out to my opponent, by the way, who just won his RPTQ from that PPTQ.
Oh, way to convert.
Yeah, good job, bud. Shout out to Justin Sloan. But anyway, like we came on the show the next week. I was like, yeah, I played a PPTQ for Vaughn. I know that I quit PPTQs, but like I wanted to try out this deck. And Crackling Drake is the truth. And now the card's seen playing modern. And like I read that card and just like totally was like, yeah, whatever. Like this card's always been bad. It must just be the draw card trigger, dude. Like it's just enough. It's enough to push. Go ahead.
I was going to say, and in modern, the like the sidestepping what like the game plan that your opponent tries to do to beat your main game plan
right.
just works so perfectly, and it's just so like it's just like right there, it's just enough. And but even then, right, like maybe you just need to play Terramanders and you don't need to have this, and you can just kill them before their sideboard cards matter.
Yeah,
it's so crazy.
There's I saw one list that had 4 Terramanders, no Drakes. There's so much you can do, but I think one of the things that we're learning is John Stern was right, and this is really a thing in the ice deck. Step one, and then it kind of goes from there.
Did we add mono red to this, or did mono red not get enough points? Was this like Arclight
mono
Phoenix,
red?
The shell?
Mono red is on the list and did not get over 10 points.
Okay, I just wasn't sure if we had combined them or not. I wanted to make sure the listeners knew. Okay, I just to take a second on the Arclight shell, I really like the blue red one. just like as a concept. And while I think I might personally play red because I think there are more uninteractive decks before we had this show, looking at the list now and talking about things, I actually really like where blue red sits on it. And I'm interested to try out some of the splash stuff. Like, I would want to see what we can do with a third color that's like almost free, like light splashes that we can get off our fetch land for sideboard cards. And I'm really excited to see where that goes and what we can do with that. Is that something you've looked at, Spencer, or thought about? Is like the Jeskai Arclight decks?
I think that there's not a reason to do a third color.
That's fair. Like, that could just be the answer too.
Like, I think that the ability to just like be a very, very consistent thing in the Ice Arclight deck is probably should be like. It's funny because I actually think Arclight is like a pretty terrible standard card, and like the idea of being an Arclight deck is pretty silly. But I think that Faithless Looting basically fixes all of my problems with Arclight. Yeah, I would have a hard time like seeing what you would want in white. Because typically, if you're playing a third color from like a streamlined deck, it's typically for sideboard cards.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't know what color is going to fix a matchup. But I haven't thought about it a ton, so.
That's totally true. And then Ryan Overturf, you know, he did well with the Teamer deck, which I thought was like, that deck was crazy to me. Like, we looked at that before we recorded the episode, and it's like four Mistress Bauble, four Traverse the Woven Wall, and then like had one green sideboard card, and like the bullets were Magus of the Moon. So it's clear you can do whatever, but I'm with you. I don't know if it's right or not, but it's something where I want to explore. I haven't put enough thought into it. I'm kind of just talking out loud. I was hoping you had.
No, that was my first thought. You asked me the question. That was my first thought in the whole thing.
Well, but and the thing with it is, too, is that I think a note with this is that these decks are far from solved. Like, there's a lot of exploration that still can center around this engine that could lead us in a lot of different directions from where we are right now. And it's just about what pulls you in that direction, right? I think you asked a good question there, Spencer, of like, okay, what pulls you in a desire to want to play white? What pulls you in a direction of wanting to play green? And correctly identifying that, I think what pulls you to blue versus the mono red is thing in the ice. Like, that's the reason to be the blue deck. And then the mono red is just because of the efficiency of the burn and your clean mana.
Yeah. Just to be clear, none of this is going to matter because the Sultai Nexus deck is going to just take over and destroy Modern. So.
Whoa, there's a Sultai Nexus deck in Modern?
With have you not seen this?
I have not seen it
yet. Oh, people are crushing with it.
That, honestly, I was at work today and I was like, I wonder if Wilderness Reclamation is good enough for Modern.
Dude, let me give you some highlights. That engine is busted. Let me give you some highlights of the Sultai Teachings Reclamation deck.
All right.
Four Growth Spiral.
Teachings.
Yeah. Four Growth Spiral. Growth Spiral. Yes.
I buy it. Okay. I'm a believer.
Three Mystical Teachings.
Never lost.
One Nexus of Fate. Three Wilderness Reclamation.
Love it.
Three Snapcaster Mages.
Never heard of it. Keep talking. That's not a standard card.
Do you know anything else about this deck? Oh, and the fun of Blue Sun Zenith for the sweetness.
All right, Saffron Olive, how many Search for Escanta am I playing?
None. You don't need...
What? That's like my favorite part. Reclamation plus Escanta. That's what's breaking standard. That's what's going to win the Pro Tour in 4 days. Or 6 days, I guess. But, yeah. Wow. Okay. I thought, man, that's crazy.
Okay is not a segment on this show.
Oh, my bad. But it is if you go to... if you go to Even Odds Pod.
You don't even know the name of your own podcast.
I have dyslexia. That's how that works.
That's not how that works.
I want to say one thing, though, about Phoenix before we get off that, because we are getting a little derailed. We said it earlier that you like the blue deck because you can find your one of powerful cards. I like the blue-red deck for that same reason.
You can
find your Blood Moons when you need them. You can find your counter spells. You can do that kind of stuff, and that's a huge game. So, yep. Just wanted to say that.
Like Faithless Looting plus all of the other one mana spells is like, it's just so good. It's so
and
good.
The free spells.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oof. And Sanders. All right. Should we talk about this second to last deck, Spencer? Because I know you're a big fan of this.
Yeah. One. I mean, this is just a deck that I'm wrong about. We have Burn coming in with 47 points. This is a deck that I plan to find to probably do a video of me playing the deck quite a bit. When I get the chance, I really want to, you know, just kind of figure it out. And yeah, I'm just wrong. I think that the biggest thing about this deck is there's so many ways to build it right now. You know, whether you're playing Skew of the Critics or not, whether you're playing Bump of the Night with Skew of the Critics, whether you're playing the new one mana draw 700 cards, you know, this deck has gotten a lot, and the deck is probably just better than it was before. in addition to just being better than I thought it was. Like, I'm just wrong, and I'm willing to admit it.
Well, it's one of those things that this deck has always had a really solid core, right? Like, for Modern. Like, it already had all of the pieces to be a viable deck. And then it got new pieces that are a thing that can push it even farther in that direction. And it's crazy to think about, like, oh, now we have so many good one-mana burn spells. Now we have to evaluate which ones we should be playing as opposed to just put all of them in there.
Yeah, for sure. And it's crazy, too, just how, like, two cards change the deck drastically. And it's like what Spencer said, too. It's like not all of them are even playing Skewer. So it's not like...
Not all of them are even playing Light at this stage.
Exactly. Yeah, that was what I was going to get to. It's like two new cards get added, completely change the archetype, and it's not like the universal staples. And it's like, wait, what? It's insane. I don't know. I'm not a Burn aficionado, but I've heard that this stuff is the truth, and I'm very scared to play against Burn at an event if I didn't play the Unbeatable Radiant Fountain in my deck. So, well,
it's funny because, like, you know, the, you know, whether you're playing... do you guys remember when a Tarkus command was printed and it was like, this deck is playing main deck Skullcrack now? Like, this deck doesn't even play that card anymore. It was like, that card's broken! The card's busted! Like, that card turned this deck into a real deck, in my opinion. And now it's not even playing it. Like, that's how good this deck is now. So I'm wrong. I'm admitting I'm wrong. And I want you all to know that.
Word. I have heard you loud and clear that you think that you are wrong.
But I'm never wrong.
Yeah.
But also, no, I was going to say that you weren't wrong, but I was just going to meme for a second. So.
why play two mana burn spells when you can play one mana burn spells?
That's what I mean. Bump in the night, skewer the critics, you know, just do it all. Then your light up the stages are amazing.
Yeah. And then, like, I like Collins Mullins. He's, like, gone down the route of Bomak Courier a bunch, too, and tried that out. And I think, like, that card, that's, like, another card that's totally reasonable, I think. So there's a lot you can do with the burn shells. And I'm curious what you guys think about this. Do you think burn just is, like, normally not given enough respect and doesn't get innovated enough because of, like, the play style and stuff like that, and it takes cards like this to get people to look at it again and be like, oh, wait, there's so much we can do? Or do you really think it is, like, the power of those cards that we just talked, the skewer and light of the stage, it's shifting it that way
to get people to look at it? I think the new cards typically increase innovation, but I don't know that it's, like, necessary.
Yeah, I think that's it. I don't know that it's necessarily one or the other, but it's probably a combination of the two. And I definitely agree that burn generally doesn't get enough respect. Like, the deck is complicated. There's a lot of decisions on every turn. Sequencing matters a lot, and it's a thing that I don't think people give enough credence to most of the time.
Fun fact, Deflecting Palm is the card I've signed the second most of.
Is Gray Merchant of Asphodel the first?
Yeah, by a lot. Yeah. You know what's funny? I didn't give that card a zero on the set review. Casey did. I did not.
Well, when you're the face of the show, the good and the bad come to you.
No, I mean, I think that card was, like, the worst card in Mono Black, but, like, that doesn't mean that, like, it was just funny because people were like, Spencer, this is unplayable. I'm like, no, I just think it's the worst card in the deck.
It's funny to me because that's, like, such a huge part of CC and it gets brought up so much in, like, card evaluation, yet I have never heard that episode before, and I would, like, I don't know where to find it because I want to go back and... All right, I'm going to go and find this part of it because it's, like, such a pivotal part thing I'm such a part of that it's, like, weird I don't know. You know what I mean? It's just, like, a weird moment. It's like if you didn't know about, like, the Declaration of Independence and you're an American. You know what I mean? It's just weird.
You should know the Constitution, guys. You should know the Constitution. Let's talk about our number one deck. We have Dredge coming in with 51 points. I don't know that I'm wrong about this, but I'm surprised by this.
Like, well, I think this is a tale as old as Magic.
It's as old as Dredge, at least.
Dredge. Yeah, sleep on Dredge, die to Dredge. That is the way that it goes. And forever, as long as Dredge has been a legal thing, if you sleep on Dredge, you will die to Dredge.
So there's a lot of events going into the points for this. And I probably text Mason 1.5 events through, and I was like, Dredge is definitely going to be number one. It wasn't even a question to me. Even there was so much room for people to make up, I was like, if this is a trend already through 1.5 of these events, it's going to continue to be a trend. And there was a point where Burn overtook Dredge, and then the last two events put Dredge back over. It was like, yeah, like, people just have, like, forgotten about Dredge. Or one of the big things that happens with Dredge specifically is that people start to attack they change their graveyard hate to attack certain decks and think that that graveyard hate will be good enough specifically for dredge, and it never is. Like, if you're going to be dredge, you need dredge hate, not graveyard hate, if that makes sense.
No, absolutely, and I think that's a key point of how we've gotten to where we are right now, and it's the rise of Phoenix that I think in some ways has contributed to this, and then the banning of KCI, right? Because of KCI, people had a lot of generalized graveyard hate in order to try to deal with that deck. But Phoenix, like Surgical Extraction, is specifically very good against that deck and better than a lot of the generalized graveyard hate because it removes the ability to be able to just cast Phoenixes in combat and just use them in that way. You just get rid of them. But Surgical is medium against dredge as compared to like Haymakers like Leyline or Rest in Peace or any of these other kind of cards. And that Surgical is still good against them, but it's not just going to shut the deck down because they have too many redundant pieces that do similar things.
For sure, yeah. I agree with that 100%. And I think another symptom of this, too, is like Trey said, you know, KCI was one of the top decks, and people had graveyard hate for KCI because you had to do something to try and not lose. And now that, like, that's gone, people are like, thank goodness I can have a 15-card sideboard. I don't have to play my 3 Rest in Peace. And then they're like, all right, I'm going to play this 1 Surgical for Bird and then, you know, miscellaneous decks. I'm going to play these 2 Tireless Trackers to beat, you know, the Jund decks or whatever. And those kind of changes happen. And because of that, and like, once again, I feel like dredge, while it's done really well, hasn't been the talk of the town. And those two things just kind of lead to dredge taking over. But luckily, since you're a listener of this podcast, you will come prepared with your Tormod grips and you'll be ready.
Yeah. And being people not talking about dredge is certainly a thing dredge wants to have happen. Like, everyone wants dredge to be on the down low all the time. And, you know, I know I talked about that, you know, I qualified for Pro Tour Aether Revolt. I did that with dredge. Like, that's what I played that season, that entire time. I've played a considerable amount of dredge. This is a deck that I like a lot, and it always performs well when people are not thinking about it or talking about it. So I'm sorry that we're betraying all dredge players out there right now by bringing it up.
Yep. Yeah. And then its worst matchup, Amulet Titan, isn't even in our top 10. So,
yeah. That's true. That's true. Aiden really, really wants to talk about Amulet Titan.
I love Amulet Titan, and dredge is literally a buy. Like, it and Boggles are your easiest matchups by a country mile. Like, it's not funny.
It's actually funny. It's one of Voligan's best matchups, too, for what it's worth. It's like, yes. That's what oh, good for Voligan.
But Titan Shift is what I beat in the finals of the PPTQ on the path to the Pro Tour with dredge.
Weird really? Flex.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh man, those people were skimping.
it just turns out that if you put in 9 power on turn 2, it doesn't really matter what your opponent does.
Well, didn't they just
no, because he won. You know the outcome.
Yeah,
they didn't anger the gods.
They should have angered or scape shifted the next, like, you know, a turn earlier. Okay. Anyway. Really, really quick, I want to touch on a point that was made earlier. I actually really like Surgical Extraction against dredge, specifically in Snapcaster decks. So, like, I actually think that's like probably the best dredge hate you can possibly have. So, I think that I'd like caveat the Surgical comment with if you actually play Snapcaster Mage, it's actually like the actual best hate.
Well, but yeah, that gets into a different situation, right? Because there's a limited number of decks that play that combination, but there's a lot more decks that are playing Surgical as their hate that don't have the Snapcaster.
That's fair.
But yeah. but that is a good point that like Surgical plus Snapcaster is a different kind of deal, and it is better.
Yeah.
I have a where do we fall on Rest in Peace in our Snapcaster decks? Because I like Rest in Peace in my control decks. Where are you two?
I would. I don't even think there's a reason to play Rest in Peace when you play Snapcaster Surgical.
Interesting. Trey,
I'm still pro Rest in Peace.
Okay. That's a debate between control and players. I don't play either deck. I was just curious.
And I don't know that it always has to be just one or the other. Like, it's always possible to have a mixture in order to target different things and give you more coverage.
Yeah. That's totally fair. Yep.
All right. So that breaks down our top 10. Number 1 right now, dredge. Number 2, burn. Number 3, Phoenix. Number 4, Jeskai. Number 5, Shadow. Number 6, Whirr. 7 and 8, Blue Eye Control and Titan Shift. And 9 and 10 are Tron and Spirits. If you want to see the entire top 16, go to patreon.com/CCMTG. Become a patron of $3 or more per episode. That's $12 per month. And join the Constructive Critics group where there's a conversation going on about it right now. Yeah, that is going to do it for us this week. Sorry that your Amulet Titan deck didn't make the top 10 there, Mason.
You didn't even ask what deck we would play this weekend, so I didn't have a moment to talk about it. I was so ready. I thought that was my end.
That's not your end.
Amulet's so good. Just so few people play it. It's not as hard as it seems. Keep go out there, people. Fight the good fight.
Trey, what would you play this weekend?
Blue Red Phoenix. I've been playing a lot with the deck. I like it a lot. Unless I was playing at the LGS, and then I would play Blue Black Mill always and forever.
I think I would play Blue White Control, but I've got Titan Shift sleeved up, and that's what I was going to play at my next event anyway. So I'd probably end up playing that. I would play Naya Titan Shift. Let's be honest.
Sword Tooth.
No, that card's so bad.
It's so good when Gutshot and Bolts everywhere, and people are killing your little 1/1 friends.
True.
So thank you everybody for listening this week. Don't forget to check out our sponsor and our Patreon. You can find me at Spencer H. You can find Trey at TreyMC on Twitter. You can find Small Mite at Mason E. Clark. You can find them every week on the Even Odds podcast. Thank you so much to these guys for filling in for Seth and John this week. And we'll see you guys all next week with another episode of Constructive Criticism.
Thanks for having us.
Magic.